You're listening to the Pitch Vision My Coach Cricket Show. I'm David Hinchliffe, and this is show number 3. This week's show is a special mailbag edition where your questions that have been emailed in to me over the last week, I try to answer. We're going to be doing this kind of show on a regular basis, so if you have any pressing questions that you need answering, then just drop an email to mycoach@pitchvision.com. That's M-I-C-O-A-C-H @pitchvision.com. And if your question's a good one, then it'll be answered right here on the show. Before we get into the questions, though, I just want to put the word out for a co-host. I'm looking for somebody who has a half hour to an hour to spare to help me present the show. You don't need to have any broadcasting experience. You don't even need to have any coaching experience, although it would be nice if you had. I'm just looking for somebody with an opinion and somebody who's played cricket for a reasonable amount of time. It'd be nice if you came from a test-playing nation that wasn't England, just so people don't have to put up with my accent all the time. But it isn't essential. Okay, so coming up in the show, we've got your questions. But before we do that, I wanted to introduce a feature called the My Coach Thought of the Week. This is where I go through a topic which I think might be of interest to you in as much detail as we can get into 4 or 5 minutes. This week's thought comes from a quote that I read recently in Nasser Hussain's autobiography from Alan Knott, the Kent and England wicketkeeper. So have a listen and let me know what you think. You can email your opinions to mycoach@pitchvision.com. Alan Knott is widely regarded as Kent and England's best wicketkeeper and a fine batsman to boot, often battling for runs in the middle order when his team were in trouble. In short, a good man to turn to for a cricketing philosophy. Knott's theory on playing better cricket is simple. Realise what you're doing is important, but try to think that it isn't. But what does that really mean? Sports psychologists might refer to this as a state of mind called flow, or the zone. To cricketers, it's about being in the moment. That feeling you get when everything is coming as easy to you as it would be if you were playing a knockabout game on the beach. Both important and unimportant at the same time. If you've ever experienced how well you play when you're thinking like this, you know exactly where Knott's coming from. He was essentially talking about batting when he said it, but bowlers, wicketkeepers and fielders can all apply the same ideas to improve their game. In fact, cricket coach Roy Palmer has written a book about it called Zone Body, Zone Mind, where he outlined some simple tricks to get you into this state. If you don't already have it, you can pick up a copy at pitchvision.com in the book section. The secret for Roy is the ability to relax even at the moments of greatest tension. When we feel under pressure and tense mentally, our bodies become tense, and we're unable to use that smooth efficiency that all cricket skills require. Our shoulders are hunched. Our faces are scrunched up with effort, and we clench our fists. Energy is used to tense up rather than play a flowing cover drive or to bowl with a relaxed action. Our conscious mind is sabotaging our ability to play. The solution is to become aware of tension in our body and be able to relax it enough to do just what comes naturally enough. Australian great Greg Chappell talks about this too. His way of relaxing while batting was to focus all his concentration for a very short period on the ball before letting his subconscious mind take over at the moment of delivery. As psychologists have shown since, this works. If you've practiced enough, your body knows what to do without conscious thought. Letting it do its thing will stop you tensing up, prevent wasted energy, and get you better results. But just like practicing your cricket skills, these mental techniques need practice too. You can't expect to learn them in the middle of an important match. So when you go into the nets, look to focus on how you are thinking as well as how you're playing. Ask yourself the following questions. Where's the tension in my body? Can I relax more? Where is my focus at the point of delivery? When can I switch off? And what can I focus on to relax my mind? These questions will help you practice in net sessions what you should be doing in the middle. Often this is the best way to use nets, as they're unrealistic in many ways compared to practice matches, but that's a whole different topic. It's certainly a complex issue, but the last thing you want to be doing when going out to play is have a muddled mind full of theories, which is why Alan Knott put it so well in the first place. Realise what you're doing is important, but try to think that it isn't, is a fast way to relax your conscious mind and let the really effective part take over. Okay, so moving on to the next section of the show. This is where we'll be going through your questions. Remember, you can email your own questions to mycoach@pitchvision.com. It doesn't matter what the topic is, as long as it's related to cricket in some way. Cricket coaching, cricket fitness, cricket nutrition, tactics, technical stuff, anything you like. Email it through to mycoach@pitchvision.com. The first email this week is from Blake. Blake says, "Hi David, I'm an under 13 fast bowler playing at club level, and I need some help on how to improve my rhythm. There aren't many batters who enjoy the prospect of facing my bowling in the nets. I have a natural outswing, so when I throw in an inswinging Yorker, the stumps always end up flying anyway, which sounds pretty good to me. However, when I'm opening the bowling in a match, my rhythm falls to pieces and I start chopping my strides as I approach the stumps. Not quite a stutter, but enough to ruin my bowling. What can I do to improve my rhythm in a match? Another question. I'm the fittest player on the team. In the winter, I do interval training and dynamic weightlifting and core training. However, after a session of batting, I lose my action, as I feel really tired and vice versa. Is there anything I can do to stop this happening?" Okay, so two sections there for Blake. Let's go through the run-up first. So we know that Blake is quite capable of bowling well in the nets, but something seems to happen when he gets out into the middle, which makes me think that it might be something more going on in his head than it does anything to do with his ability to bowl. So let's look at that in more detail. Is he unsure of his run-up? A lot of bowlers, especially younger bowlers, can easily lose their run-up because they're growing. When you get to Blake's kind of age, you can grow quite quickly. Your run-up from one season, or even the beginning of the season to the end of the season, can be different because your stride is getting longer all the time. So the first thing I would suggest for you to do, Blake, is I would suggest for you to mark your run-up again. And the way you can do that is to just find an empty bit of pitch. You can go onto the outfield, just somewhere away from everybody, where there's plenty of space. Close your eyes, mark the start point, and then run up. When it feels like it's time to bowl, then bowl and see where you ended up. That is going to be your new run-up. You can try that three or four times. Make sure it's roughly the same place every time to stop the no ball problem. And then mark the distance out with your normal walking stride. That's a tip from Dennis Lilly. Always use your normal walking stride from beginning to end, because that doesn't change as much as the longer strides that you sometimes see people taking when they're marking their run-ups. Another thing that you might be worried about, Blake, is the problem of bowling no balls. When you're in a net, it doesn't matter if you overstep the line. But when you're in the middle, you've got the fear of going over that line and bowling a no ball. And if you're playing certain forms of cricket, that might even be a free hit, which is no good for anyone, except perhaps the batsman. So the best thing I can suggest there is, rather than worrying about where your front foot is landing on that very thin line, do what Ian Pont suggests, which is aim to land your foot in the box between the creases. If you do that, you don't have to worry about overstepping the line, and you also aren't going to lose enough pace for it to make any difference to the batsman, even if you bowl from quite a long way back in the box. When you're feeling a bit more confident, possibly you can start aiming for breaking the line instead of just landing in the box. But for now, if a no ball is something which is in the back of your mind and that's causing you to stutter on your run up, then give a try just landing in the box instead. The third thing that you might be worried about that's causing you to stutter is the situation of the game, i.e. there's a batsman standing at the other end who can knock you all around the place if you're not too careful and you don't bowl very well. There are going to be times when you don't bowl very well and you will get knocked all over the place. If you can accept that and just keep trying your hardest instead, then you should be able to get over that fear. if you're worried about failing, then people fail all the time. You just have to accept that fact and do your best not to. The best way you can approach that thought is to know exactly where you're going to be putting the ball on any particular ball. Now, sometimes obviously that'll change. If you're trying to bowl a Yorker, that's going to be a different length from a good length ball, or possibly a ball just back of a length. You're not going to be bowling many bouncers at your age, especially if you're in the UK. So focus on the area of the pitch that you want to land the ball, and just forget about the batsman. Just aim straight for that point at the speed that you're comfortable bowling at. Now, I have to admit, all this is a little bit of guesswork. It might be none of those three things, but those are three very common things that cause a stutter in a run-up. Your aim as a bowler is to have a smooth and rhythmical approach to the crease. If you're not doing that, Blake, that's going to affect your bowling. I think it's something going on in your mind, Blake, so try those three things. Try landing in the box. Try measuring your run-up out again. And try ignoring the context of the game situation and just aiming to land that ball in exactly the same place that you want it to at the start of your run-up. Now, moving on to your second question about tiredness, I think that's a big debate at the moment. I know Geoffrey Boycott has talked about it recently. You could be lacking cricket-specific fitness. There's a big difference between being fit in the gym and being fit to play cricket. Now, that said, it's very important to be fit. So the first question I would ask you, if I was coaching you, would be what kind of training are you doing? You've mentioned it's interval training, dynamic weightlifting and core training. The dynamic weightlifting and core training could be bicep curls and sit-ups. Now, neither of those particularly useful for fast bowling. The sit-ups are okay, but there are better things that you can be doing. And the bicep curls, you might as well not bother unless you're interested in having big guns for the beach. What you should really be aiming for is more cricket-specific movements in the gym. I've got some articles on the site which give you some ideas on that. If you go on to pitchvision.com and head for the complete guide to cricket fitness on the sidebar, then that should give you some ideas. The other question is, how much is it happening in real matches? You mentioned it's happening in the nets when you have a session of batting, but you didn't mention if it happens in matches. If it doesn't happen in matches, I shouldn't worry about it too much. If it's only happening after you've been batting in the nets or bowling in the nets for 2 hours, and then you'd go and try and do the other thing, then I wouldn't worry too much about it. It's only natural. 2 hours of bowling is a lot for anybody, especially for a 13-year-old. If you are doing a lot of bowling, then I would suggest cutting it back. There are ECB guidelines for fast bowlers, even for practice. So head over to the ECB website, and that's ecb.co.uk, and have a look for the fast bowling directives. That'll give you an idea how many balls you should be bowling in a practice session. If you're bowling considerably more than that, then you're not only risking injury, which is the main reason for the directives, but you could be tiring yourself out excessively. So be careful of that. If you're not bowling enough compared to the ECB directives, then I'd say bowl some more. That'll build up your fitness. The reason the directives are there are to stop people getting injured. Injury is caused through over bowling and through fatigue. So don't bowl too much, but also don't bowl too little. Find those ECB directives. I'll put a link up to them in the show notes. And follow them as close as you can. A little bit less isn't too much of a problem. A little bit more isn't too much of a problem. But don't go mad and don't under bowl. Also, another question is how much fitness work are you doing in season? That would be another thing I'd like to know. It might be that you're doing excellent fitness work out of season. You're very fit at the start of the season. But by the end of the season, you're not doing very well because your fitness has dropped away. It's important to keep doing fitness work even in the season. Now, clearly you can't do as much, and there's certain things that you wouldn't want to be doing in season. Like, for example, you wouldn't want to be going on an extremely long run on the morning of a match, or in fact, you'd never be wanting going on an extremely long run. You wouldn't want to be doing very heavy weightlifting the day before a match, although at your age, very heavy weightlifting probably isn't that great an idea anyway. But you should be doing something. I mean, even if it's just a simple bodyweight workout, we're doing a few press-ups and a few chin-ups and things like that, Just to maintain your strength levels, just to maintain your conditioning levels, so your ligaments are strong, your muscles are strong, and they don't get fatigued as easily. I think that'll make quite a big difference, especially if you find you're quite fit at the start of the season and not getting tired during your training sessions and matches, but at the end of the season you are getting more tired during your matches and your training sessions. So that's all for now, Blake. If you have any similar questions, Blake, remember you can email them through to mycoachpitchvision.com, or you can head over to pitchvision.com and you can contact me by clicking on the contact link. The next question comes from a worried mother called Zena. I'll read that out now. My son plays under 13 county cricket for a minor county. He's the youngest in the squad and he's the smallest. I'm concerned that his calorie intake is not sufficient to power all his body's needs. It's been hinted that his position in the squad could be in the balance because of his size, although he's a very capable cricketer. He would be gutted if this became the case. Now, I got Zena to clear up a few things there, and she's been very kind to send me through the type of eating that he does. He does have a quite low BMI, 16.5. Anything less than around about 18.5 is probably not enough. So there's definitely something going on there. Although he may just be small for his age, it does happen that some children, especially around the age of 13, haven't started to grow into adulthood yet. So it's quite possible that in the coming months he will suddenly have a growth spurt. So I shouldn't worry about it too much on that front, although he is slightly underweight, so there are things that can be done to sort that out. Now, his diet is generally low in fat and high in carbohydrates, and there's quite a lot of processed carbohydrates in there as well. By that I mean food that comes in a packet, basically. Things like crisps, jelly, yogurt, and even pasta or noodles or chips or pasties. All of those things are the type of stuff that he has on his diet. Now, he does also have evening meals which have vegetables and beans and chicken, that kind of thing as well. But again, it tends to be processed stuff, pasta, pie, burgers with bread and that kind of thing. I think Zena's doing a pretty good job. There are certain things he can do to improve his diet and to get more calories in. It can be hard to do because people eat as much as they want to eat. So you feel like you're forcing stuff down your throat just to eat a little bit more. Okay, so there are a few basic principles that we can follow to get a few more calories into the diet, although we don't need to worry too much about it because, as I say, he's growing and he seems to be eating okay. He needs to be eating plenty of vegetables and plenty of fruit, because fruit is higher in calories than vegetables. His meals really need to be based on high quality protein and high quality carbohydrates. So the protein should come from lean meat like chicken, beef, and fish. Oily fish would be excellent. The carbohydrates need to come from whole food sources like rice, like oats. And he's currently on a low-fat diet. I'm not against a low amount of trans fats, which is the kind of processed man-made fat that you find in things like margarine. But natural fats are a very important part of the diet. And in fact, if someone is underweight, then they can be getting a lot of calories from natural fats. So you should be looking at fats from oily fish, from cheeses, definitely from nuts is a big source. And I wouldn't recommend any supplements, except for possibly a fish oil supplement. Those omega-3 tablets that you see in the shops, you can buy those online, or you can just nip into Boots or somewhere like that and buy some omega-3 fats to supplement his diet with in tablet form. The reason I mention that is because it's perfectly safe for children to do that. In fact, there have been several studies to show that children supplemented with omega-3 perform better in school. So that's an added advantage. He's also going to be healthier, and the healthier he is, the more he's going to grow. Don't worry necessarily about the amount of calories that are going in. Just make sure that he's eating regularly, even up to every two, three hours, eating regularly, getting high quality food when he eats those things, and possibly, if everything else is in place, supplementing with omega-3, or just getting plenty of fish in the diet. I'd also recommend that you looked at some kind of training for him. You mentioned that he doesn't do any training at the moment. So what I'd recommend on that front is that the more training that he can do now, the stronger his bones and his muscles are going to be as he starts to grow. It's never too soon for him to be doing training. Cricket is a sport which requires you to be strong and fast. And to be strong and fast, you need to be doing strength training. That doesn't necessarily mean going into a gym and lifting up massive weights. He can be doing body weight training straight away. Again, press-ups, chin-ups, those kind of things. With a bit of help, he should be able to get started on doing. And he can do anywhere. He can do in the house, he can do in his garden, or he can go to a gym and do those things if he needs to be. If you do choose going down the gym route, find a specialist trainer who deals with young children or teenage children. And find someone who specialises in developing well-rounded athletic kids rather than someone who's looking for a particular method of training. There's no danger in learning how to lift weights at his age. You don't want to be lifting heavy weights, but learning how to lift weights, learning the correct techniques, and regularly moving your body in three dimensions is going to make him stronger and more athletic, and it's going to help him grow. Moving on, we're sticking with the fitness theme for the next one. I'm not sure who this is from, so bear with me because they didn't give their name. But here's the question. Hi, I'm a 20-year-old fast bowler, and 2 years ago I started doing upper body weight training. Since then my bowling has lost speed and I feel sluggish. I've now stopped doing upper body weights and I'm going to do just leg weights. Is this a good idea, and is there any advice or exercises you can give me so that I can regain my pace? Now, the first thing that springs to mind here is I'd be interested to know what kind of upper body training was done and what results he got in the gym. Did you get faster? Did you get stronger? Were there any other changes? Were you lifting more weights at the end than you were at the beginning? And what kind of exercises were you doing? I mentioned the bicep curl, the evil of the bicep curl before. I don't think it's necessarily evil. I just think there are much, much better things you can be doing with your time if you are going to the gym. So I would like to know that, but let's assume that everything went well. He was using the methods that I recommend on pitchvision.com in the Complete Guide to Cricket Fitness. Being fitter in the upper body and stronger in the upper body shouldn't make you sluggish. It should make you stronger. Now, if you combine that with playing, you're going to be injured less and you're going to be performing better, because strength is a key component in performance when it comes to cricket. So I'd want to know exactly what was happening there. I wouldn't cut out all upper body work at all. I'd have another look at the type of upper body work that you were doing and see what is working and what isn't working. Have a look at the principles of cricket fitness on the pitchvision.com site and see if any of those, any of the exercises that you're doing or you have been doing have made you feel sluggish, because they're not relevant to cricket. Generally speaking, I would consider, especially if you're a bowler, doing upper body power work. Certainly things like medicine ball work, throwing a medicine ball against the wall, and those kind of clap push-ups that you see, those kind of exercises will teach you how to generate power in your upper body, which is a critical component of fast bowling. So you do need strength in your shoulders, flexibility in your shoulders. You need strength in your lower back, and strength in your midsection or your core. So all that kind of upper body work is important. It's also important for injury prevention, as I mentioned before. If you've got strong shoulders and a strong back, you're less likely to get injured. If you're not injured, you can play cricket. If you are injured, it doesn't matter how good you are, you're on the sidelines. Now, that said, research has shown that there is a direct relationship between how powerful your legs are and how fast you can bowl. So doing exercises like squats and jump squats and Olympic lifts, which are full body movements like cleans and presses, if you can learn them, are all excellent ways to develop power in your legs and not be sluggish, as you put it. However, the general principles remain the same. You want to be using big movements, compound movements, you know, ones that move more than one joint at the same time. So squats, for example, move your ankle and your knee and your hip all at the same time. And you want to be doing them as fast as the weight allows in most cases, because bowling is something that requires fast, coordinated movements. The other thing you need to be thinking about, of course, is doing plenty of bowling. And it doesn't matter how much work you do in the gym, there's no substitute for bowling and trying to bowl fast and working on your action to bowl fast as well. So although I've talked about fitness there, I do want you to think about whether you're getting the best from yourself for other reasons as well. So have a look at how much you're bowling. Have a look at any changes that you might have made to your lifestyle, which might have slowed you down. Make sure you're getting enough sleep, that kind of thing. And also bowl. Just do plenty of bowling. And if you can bowl with a coach there to help show you how to bowl faster, all the better. Good luck with that. Speaking of bowling, I've had a question from Paul, who is a coach. I have observed a pupil standing over 6 feet in my sessions that tends to collapse his back trailing leg and therefore not make the most of his natural height when bowling. Can you suggest any training drills I can use to strengthen his action and ways we can work on his action for him to also become a quick bowler? Okay, so there's a specific technical point there and also a general question about how to become a quick bowler. If you have a look on pitchvision.com about how to become a quick bowler, there's a three-part series on how to bowl fast. So take a look at that and make sure you're following the all three parts of that series. Now, when it comes to this particular question, I'm not the fast bowling guru like Ian Pont, but I can say this. Some players do collapse into their bowling actions, and some of them are very fast bowlers when they do it. Look at Sean Tate. He's got a terrible action, but it works for him. He bowls fast. So my question would really be, is the pupil getting accuracy and pace from what they're doing at the moment? Just because something looks wrong, it doesn't necessarily mean it is wrong. The bowling action is a very individual thing and not something you want to be tampering with. So I'd have a look at that first, and I would think long and hard before making any changes. If I did decide to try and make any changes, well, I'd probably refer you to somebody with a bit more experience in that field, like Ian Pont. But certainly the principle I want you to take away from this is, just because somebody is doing something wrong, it doesn't necessarily mean that you have to change it, because it could work for them. As Greg Chappell says, it's not about the process, it's about the outcome. I hope that helps you, Paul. And that's just about all the time we've got for questions today. Remember, you can email your questions through to mycoach@pitchvision.com, or you can head over to pitchvision.com and click on the contact button there and send me an email through the form. If it's a good question, I'll answer it for you, and hopefully that'll get you playing better cricket. Okay, the last feature that I have for you today is a product review feature. This is going to be a regular item too, so if there's any particular things that you want to hear more about and get some more details on them, let me know and I'll go into as much detail as I can. This week I've purchased some omega-3 supplements for myself. I thought I'd give them a go and explain a little bit more about them, as we were talking about omega-3 supplements a little bit earlier on. They come in 90 capsules from myprotein.co.uk. They don't taste of anything unless you bite down on one. But if you just swallow it, you don't taste anything at all. And the reason why I got these slightly different from the normal fish oil supplements that I get, is they're very high in what's known as EPA. Now, normally there's a rough balance of EPA and DHA, which are the two types of fish oil that you see in these supplements. But this one has a much higher concentration of EPA to DHA. So I wanted to see if that made a difference to what I was doing, and I've been taking those capsules for about a week. The benefits of fish oil, generally speaking, are you get better body composition. They allow you to burn fat better and retain muscle better. They're good for your heart. They're good for your brain. And they're also anti-inflammatory if you're having any injury-related problems. So they're a good supplement all round to have, and they've been proven to work in pretty much everybody from a very early age. In fact, you find now there's baby milk products with omega-3 in them, so you can really get omega-3 from any age. One thing you have to keep a very careful eye on when you're buying omega-3 supplements is contamination. Because of modern methods of fishing and the way that the seas are now, there's quite a high concentration of contamination in modern fish and modern fish oil. So you're looking for the very pure type of fish oil to minimise the amount of contamination. There'll always be a certain amount, but you want to keep that to a minimum. And this is where the MyProtein Super Omega-3 capsules really come into their own. They're very well processed and filtered to stop that contamination from happening. Although there's still a little bit, but it reduces it greatly. The high concentration of EPA is an interesting one because normally, as I said, there's a balance with EPA and DHA. The EPA tends to be the anti-inflammatory part of the process, and the DHA tends to be the brain part of it. So if you're thinking of it from a cricket point of view, if you're taking fish oil for concentration purposes, then you want to be looking at a decent level of DHA, which this has, but it has a much higher level of EPA. Because of the concentration of them, you can get away with eating three or four of these per day and still get plenty of fish oil. And you wouldn't even need to eat any fish additional to that, although there's no harm in having a bit of fresh oily fish two or three times a week as well. It's not going to cause you any problems. If you like fish, I'm not particularly interested in the anti-inflammatory side of things, and I'm probably more interested in the brain side of things. So in terms of what's supposed to happen, I would say this is a supplement which isn't particularly meant for me and isn't particularly aimed at cricketers. However, if you're coming at it from a point of view of just choosing a fish oil supplement, these are excellent. They're very good. They're very high quality. You don't get any fishy aftertaste. And they give you a reasonably high level of DHA and an extremely high level of EPA. I haven't had any ill effects from taking them, and I do heartily recommend them for anyone who wants to get more omega-3 into their diet. Now, that said, they're not the cheapest. You can get cheaper, although the cheaper ones tend to be a lower concentration of fish oil, so you need to have more. The ones that you see in the shops generally are around 12 to 15% EPA and DHA combined, which means you have to take a lot more to get the same effect. So watch out for that. But if you're in the UK and you want a high concentration fish oil, I do heartily recommend the myprotein.co.uk omega-3 caps, and I'll make sure that there is a link to them in the show notes. And that really is the end of the show. Just to say that you can email your questions to mycoach@pitchvision.com, or you can head over to pitchvision.com, click on contact, and fill in the details on the form there. If you want to be a co-host, then drop me a line, also mycoach@pitchvision.com. And if you have any reviews that you want to do or you want to hear about, just let me know. Thanks very much for listening, and I'll see you again next time.